Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda Farrow.
And I'm Michael Footer.
Each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 78, Discord, Twitch, Trust, and Safety. Well, we got a jam-packed episode today.
Yeah, this one's gonna be fun. I'm really looking forward to the bottom half of the show where we discuss new stuff from both Discord and Twitch about how they're dealing with some of the problems on their platforms and the users on their platforms, because for Twitch this goes beyond just behavior on the platform. And I have some very positive thoughts about that, but I also have some concerns, and we'll talk about it when we get there.
So, but you know what we're going to talk about first?
Probably E3 again, because I think we've talked about it for the last three episodes.
All we ever do is talk about E3. So I know we're all a bit tired of talking about E3, but let's do it one more, definitely at least one more time.
Yeah, speaking of tired, it seems like the ESA is finally tired of everybody else breaking news about E3. So, obviously, we reported in December that E3 was going to be fully digital, and then VGC had a couple of scoops on that front, and then the ESA did something really crappy in response, which we mentioned last
week. Listen, you gotta get ahead of these stories.
Yeah.
You know, if we're breaking news, it means that you're not talking. And if you're not talking, we're talking.
Yeah. What's amazing to me is the ESA supposedly represents publishers who are in one of the most communicative, interactive mediums on Earth, and the ESA
far
itself...
far more communicative than most tech.
Yeah, so and the ESA itself does not know how to manage its communications.
Not even a little.
Garbage at it. So we do actually have some news about what's going to be happening during what normally would have been E3 and is going to be slightly different E3. It's a digital event. It will be taking place June 12th through 15th. It will be entirely free.
That's good.
the publisher members of the ESA, I am sure, were like, no, you're not putting our content behind your paywall.
Yeah.
Digitally.
That's like, not a thing. Because we'd be giving this away for free on our own platforms, yeah. in our own summer games mess.
Please.
Care of Jeff Grubb.
Please gargle boiling water at that point, I think is pretty much what the publishers had to say to that.
You know what?
Yeah.
I don't blame them.
Yeah. Participants in the event will include Nintendo, Xbox, Capcom, Konami.
Eh?
So get ready for Pro Evolution Soccer, or maybe some
and
more Bomberman.
Patchy slots.
Ubisoft, Take-Two, and WB Games missing from
that
list.
But notably missing, the biggies, Activision, EA, Square Enix, Sega, Sony, Bamco, Bandai Namco, THQ, and every single indie publisher out there.
Now, that's not to say that more things won't get announced between now and then, but this is a fairly anemic list.
It's thin. It's really, really thin. And it's Sony, not to like, say that...
laughing this off, it's like, you know what? We do not need you.
Sure, and I mean, that's also in line with the fact that they haven't actually been at E3.
Yep, but also...
for a couple of E3s.
Right, and Nintendo has had a floor presence, and Microsoft pulled out entirely a couple of years ago.
But Microsoft also has the Microsoft Theater, which is, like, right in LA Live, so, I mean, they weren't in the LACC, but they were at E3.
Right, and it's no shock that EA isn't there. They haven't been there for years.
They've had their own
EA Play event out in Hollywood.
So the thing that I do want to stress is that even though indie publishers were not listed within the event, because, I mean, what's Devolver going to do at E3? Be in the parking lot again? Like,
oh, that whole
across the street?
And there is an amazing story. If you don't know the story between Devolver and E3 and how pissed off the ESA has gotten at Devolver's parking lot event,
by
the way, that parking lot event is amazing every year.
It's so good.
And I'm not just saying that because it is the one time during the show where you can be guaranteed
food
to eat something.
Food and drink.
And be in air conditioning and comfort.
Yes. They always take care of the press and content creators and makers. Yeah. It's really great.
But beyond that, it is an amazing atmosphere. It is a great way to demo games.
And it's also a really good way to like hang out with your friends when mm-hmm. you're at E3. So anyway, my point with all of that is that there will still be indie games showcased at E3, likely through Xbox.
Yes. And, of course, we will see a number of digital events through Jeff Grubb's Summer Game Mess that will happen, which will feature...
I feel like I should make Jeff a t-shirt. You or, should. Like, I should brand this for him.
You should.
Just so that we can, like, have merch made.
I would love that.
That would be hilarious.
So, I actually, as I was researching this, I wanted to find the full list of publishers that were in. Yeah. So that we could be very clear, because what I'm going off is the Verge story that's linked in the show notes. The website for the new E3 is an absolute joke. There's nothing there. It is bare bones. So, look, publishers don't need digital E3. Clearly, the publishers that are participating are throwing the ESA a bone because they feel bad for them. Because they could do this on their own and better.
Or it's an ongoing strategic partnership. Sure. It's still important to keep on good terms with the ESA, kind of.
Is it, though?
I mean, there's still kind of a lobbying group, so maybe?
And
I mean, I don't know what they're lobbying
for. The lobbying group that was like rah-rah Trump, by the way.
Ugh, I forgot about
which
that.
Which, if you're not Activision, maybe that doesn't sit well with you. Ooh. Activision, on the other hand, is like, we'll hire those mofos.
Yeah, cool. That's bad.
We talked about that last week. If you missed last week's show...
You missed some salt.
Where we just, like... smashed some glass and dragged Activision through it because of some of their hires.
Not good.
I don't regret that. And usually I try to stay, and you and I both try to stay on the even side. Like, we try to be very even-handed, and I think we were fair because Activision hired a bunch of right-wing chuds, or a couple of right-wing chuds. And it was probably the saltiest that we have gotten.
The saltiest salt to ever salt, to quote myself from my Cyberpunk piece from earlier this week.
There it goes. And you should also read that. I did not actually put that new writing. I'd have to link that.
That's
in the show
fine.
Notes before we
anyway.
Before we anyway, moving on.
All of that to say, digital E3 is probably going to be a big old mess. We do not have confidence in the ESA in pulling this off, but we do have confidence in the vast majority of the publishers participating.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think this isn't about the content from the publishers.
No, gosh, no. This isn't about the games. This isn't about the consoles. This isn't about the platforms. This is about the ESA, and the ESA is a mess.
I'll drag my table out to the college campus and say, prove me wrong.
Oh, God, please don't. It's horrible. Don't use that. He's a bad man.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, but you know what's not bad?
Yeah.
The company behind Chrono.gg has kicked off its new Nexus.gg platform. So, Mike, you are more familiar with what Chrono.gg was. So what was it?
So they were a storefront, but they were a creator-curated storefront. In fact, there were a couple of podcasts and creators and that used it. So what happened was, you were playing this game, you could put this game in your curated storefront, people could go buy it, and then you'd get a cut.
That's cool.
They closed down Chrono.gg at the end of October last year.
Well, and I guess they did it so that they could focus on Nexus.gg. So Nexus.gg is a turnkey creator-curated store that can be directly integrated into games.
Yeah, this was what's really cool. Like, I think the idea of the storefronts, which has carried over from Chrono.gg, is interesting. It's a combination of Steam curators and then the Epic Game Store storefront-wide creator codes.
Right.
Right, so you have those two things melded together, and you've got a very cool idea.
Yeah.
What I really love about what they're doing is they are teaming up with Grinding Gear Games, which is the developer behind Path of Exile.
Which continues to be such an awesome game.
Yes. Although, I had no idea that some of the prices for the in-game cosmetics...
We're
talking Final Fantasy 14... Account-wise, we're talking
that's nonsense.
$40 or so, $42 for a full cosmetic set of gear, which, okay. So,
listen, MTX.
But if you're a creator that is playing Path of Exile, Nexus.gg is really cool, because what happens is you can put in-game items in your creator store, and people can go, I really love that skin. I really love that cosmetic. I love that transmog.
I loved seeing it when you were streaming. What is that? Oh, this is what it is.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting way of handling it. I would love to see the Nexus.gg stuff widely implemented, like, all over the place. I want to see that, like, everywhere. I want to see that for fashion, for crying out loud.
I think if we're looking at the things, remember, we've gotten a number of emails about NFTs and fashion and NFTs and
okay, that items. I don't love that.
I don't love that, but this on the other
this
hand,
this is cool.
This is a very cool alternative to loot boxes because you have
can see it. It's all transparent.
Additionally, you have a built-in call to action for specific things. You've got big creators who play your game, who use specific cosmetics, and then you're driving people to purchase those cosmetics.
It's such a, it's a fascinating way to really close that loop
mm-hmm.
and to make it into that virtuous cycle of, okay, creator does a thing, creator loves a thing, creator puts thing on storefront because creator's fans like the thing, creator's fans buy the thing, feeds back into everything, and then
right,
it just
the creator
cycle,
gets a cut.
Because the creator gets a cut.
And
that's the important piece of this.
When you're
that,
talking about $40 items, like I could see Epic doing something like this with Fortnite.
I would
as well.
Love to see Epic do something like this for Fortnite for skins and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like that's so fascinating. I love that.
But it would require them to have certain skins that are always there instead of the time limited thing. And that's the other thing is if you're offering things at a on a more permanent basis, it
yes.
and you're substituting the scarcity mindset, which is how a lot of these games do it. They put stuff up for 24 hours, 48 hours, and you have to
yep.
buy it now. And you think about how much money they made during the Marvel season.
Oh, absolutely, because it's all scarcity marketing. And as much mm-hmm. as I dislike scarcity marketing, it really does work. It works with psychology. It's so weird.
Yeah.
Human brains.
And I think that starts tiptoeing towards dark patterns, though.
I would tend to agree. There are some dark UX patterns that are rooted in scarcity marketing, that are rooted in making sure that people are afraid. And
yeah.
I don't like that marketing. I think that level of content marketing is just, it doesn't work for me.
I feel the same way about in-game events for single-player games.
Yeah, you don't see that as much.
I mean,
thankfully.
We saw it. I mean, one of the things I'm really happy about with Monster Hunter Rise, and I know we don't talk about the games we're playing often on this podcast, but
we don't have a what you playing. Hey, Mikey, what you playing?
Yeah, well, it's Monster Hunter Rise. So the thing and Total War Warhammer, and I played some Evil Genius 2. But the thing I love about Monster Hunter Rise is the old games on the 3DS and previous to that.
Right.
You, like, once they released that content, you could download it. And it was there because it wasn't an always online system. And I think Monster Hunter Rise is going to lean in that direction. But World, because it was for
World
PS4
was
and Xbox and then PC.
Yeah.
And there was this whole thing. You had time-limited events.
Yeah. And there were a lot of, like, interesting cross-promotional things that
yeah.
they did with
and those
Monster
do
Hunter
come
World.
Back.
They do. It's very cyclical. But at the same time, I do appreciate having permanent access to things.
Yeah.
It makes me feel less, like, squirrely about not being able to attend it or whatever.
And Ubisoft did one of those, their crossover with
Blood
of Zeus, yeah. Where for Phoenix
for Immortals,
Rising,
yeah.
For Immortals Phoenix Rising.
For sure.
And I managed to go ahead and do it by turning the difficulty all the way down because I wasn't at the point in the game. But again, I dislike that. I know Assassin's Creed Ragnarok. Is that what it's called?
Valhalla.
Valhalla, that's the one. I was thinking God of War.
I know you were.
So the new Assassin's Creed, Valhalla, did the same thing. I'm not a huge fan of that. Anyway.
So anyway,
I digress.
Is cool. This is really cool. I love this idea. We love this idea, I guess. And I want to see more of it. I want to see this everywhere.
Yeah.
I think it's cool. And it's that fan engagement that goes just beyond the content creators themselves and loops back into the game, and then the creator gets a cut, and then let's, like, it's so, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really virtuous. It's cool.
And now, Eminem in a minute.
It's not ever a minute, but
this was shorter. This one's a little shorter.
This one's a tiny bit shorter.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Ubisoft. So Ubisoft has purchased anti-cheat maker Gameblocks through its subsidiary i3d.net. The publisher plans to bake in Gameblocks' Fair Fight anti-cheat solution into i3d's one game hosting platform used by a number of AAA publishers.
Yep. One game hosting, or one game, whatever.
One game hosting
one
platform.
One game hosting platform, based on how I wrote it with capital letters in the notes. The solution is already used in Battlefield 5, Rainbow Six Siege, The Division, and Star Wars Battlefront 2. So there are big publishers, big games that are using
that
this.
That are using this, yeah. No terms were disclosed.
Yep. Embracer Group has completed its acquisition of three companies, Gearbox, Aspyr, and EasyBrain. Reminder, Gearbox was an upfront purchase of $363 million with another $1 billion in potential earnout. Aspyr, $60 million in cash and $40 million in shares, plus up to $325 million in earnout.
And considering, I think it's Aspyr that's behind the very successful Cozy Grove. that just came. Oh, yeah. Was it Aspyr or was it Spry Fox?
I don't know. Maybe both. Maybe Aspyr was the publisher.
All right, hold on a second.
All right, you're going to look it up. We're going to tap, 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 tap.
Tippity tap.
Tap, tap, tap.
No, it was Spry Fox. Okay, I was wrong.
There wasn't a Aspyr game that I saw very... Oh, Aspyr was behind the Star Wars Republic Commando remake. On Switch and Stubbs the Zombie. Right. So they've obviously Aspyr used to be the company that made Mac ports. Yes. And now they have branched out fully.
That's I always get Aspyr and Spry Fox mixed up in my head.
I mean, there's a lot of shared letters in there.
But also Play Cozy Grove. Play Cozy Grove.
The other one was Easy Brain. That was $640 million up front, with a potential $765 million in earnout.
What is Easy Brain?
We talked about them when we originally recorded this stuff. Hold on a sec. They're mobile. Oh! They do brain puzzles. So, like, they have Sudoku, and they have nanograms, and other stuff.
So they do brain teasers.
Yes. Excellent. So it's more like educational, puzzle-y type mobile games.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about Play Ventures.
This one was really, really cool. They've announced their second round of funding in the amount of $135 million U.S., The group was founded in December 2018, and since then it has invested in 24 new game companies in 10 countries.
The first investment from the second fund went to All Star Games in India. Play Ventures invested $1.5 million in pre-Series A funding. Other deals are near closing, and Play Ventures is actively looking for up-and-comers to invest in.
This is very cool.
Love to see investments in indies.
Yes, absolutely love this. Triple Dot Studios, which is a casual mobile game developer, has raised $78 million in Series A funding. They were founded in 2017, and the studio has published Blackjack, Solitaire, and Sudoku games with 11 million users, up from 6 million 6 months ago.
Holy smokes. So these are safe, approachable, and casual-friendly games. The approach does seem to be
working.
And
that seems to be their thing. They want to stick to what they know works and just do it better.
You know, I do appreciate knowing what your niche is and really just sticking with it and Absolutely. Doing what you're best at. That core knowledge is just, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love it.
They currently have 90 staff members. They have grown 3x over the past year. So they were at 30 a year ago, and now they're at 90. Funding was from Eldridge, Access Industries, and Lightspeed Venture Partners. Lightspeed, a name we see often in the game space.
We do, absolutely. Lightspeed is all over the place. So before we jump into our next two M&A stories, because Mike and I really struggled.
We did.
As to whether or not we should include them, but this is one story we could skip over, two stories we can't. So these are actually about gambling.
And as we discussed this, we were musing about, have loot boxes paved the way for more acceptance of gambling in general in gaming? Because you've got people who are already tapped in. Gaming is already tapped into those centers in the brain. So with that in mind, we're covering these stories because we think they're interesting. It's a trend we have our eye on, mm-hmm. not because it's something we're endorsing. In fact, most of the stuff when we're covering on the podcast is not an endorsement. It's just something we think is really
interesting.
Interesting and important for us to be aware of. So the first one, a company called Play, that's P-L-L-A-Y, has raised $1 million for skill-based video game wagering.
So Play runs a 1v1 skill-based betting platform, and essentially the platform does skill-based matchmaking and monitoring so that you can play, compete, and then the win is automatically reported.
The way I looked at this is like walking into a pool hall, putting your money down, and just playing someone for keeps.
I'd rather play for jelly beans.
Jelly beans is good.
I like playing for jelly beans personally. So, that's how I play poker. We mm-hmm. don't play for money, we play for jelly beans.
I appreciate this. That's what I appreciate about you.
Is that what you appreciate about me?
The round was led by Viridian Equity Partners and private investor Gail Jennings O'Byrne. This is actually part of an additive to Play's $3 million seed round that it raised in November, which brings it up to $4
million. That's right.
It was an oversubscribed round.
These funds will be used to scale up staffing, improve the user experience, further refine the tech, and fund user acquisition.
Some promoted tweets.
Yes, at the very least, and expect to hear some advertisements in the podcasts that you listen to as well. Not this one. No. Anyway, funding user acquisition, as we have often talked about on this show, is extremely expensive. User acquisition is brutal.
Yep.
User retention is also brutal, but it is less expensive.
So here's what really jumped out at me and why this one pinged my radar. The average wager size is now more than $20. So people are betting $20 on a single match.
Do you, okay, so before we continue on, I want your thoughts on this. Mm-hmm. Do you think that is due in part to everybody still being locked down?
I'm glad you asked. The number of matches has increased by a factor of 10 in 2021 so far.
Oh, so it definitely has something to do with that. We don't like, so here's the deal. Those of us that live in privilege, and there are a lot of us that have actually have access to liquid funds beyond just taking care of our bills and taking care of our children, which, I mean, they're basically bills all by themselves. We have four of them, so, you know. But beyond that, those of us that do live with that privilege, we have money to, you know, spend on entertainment mm-hmm. right now because we can't go out. Well, I mean, a lot of us are waiting for, you know, our first and second doses of our Fauci ouchies. Mm-hmm. So, do you think that this is something that is going to continue to trend upward and then maybe fall off in the long tail?
I think it might plateau. My concern is that once you normalize something like this, mm-hmm. that it becomes something people do. And I think you run into trouble gambling. I think we already have some perception problems in the game space. Loot boxes have already created huge perception problems.
Absolutely.
And I am of the mind that while loot boxes themselves may not meet the technical definition of gambling, they do meet the psychological definition of gambling.
They absolutely do meet the psychological definition. This is something that we've seen over and over and over again. And I am worried. Yeah. This does worry me because we have one more story that's in this same vein.
Yep.
So Grid Esports has brought in its Series A funding in the amount of $10 million. So this company is focused on esports data infrastructure, which is a fancy way of saying that they're going to gather data to support wagering in esports.
Yep. So obviously, if in order to have bookmakers, you need to have data. So if you think about Las Vegas, which has odds on literally everything, there needs to be data that backs it up.
Literally everything.
Literally everything.
I've never been to Las Vegas.
Well, I mean, you don't just walk in and be like, I would like to bet on how many tacos Taco Bell is going to sell today. It's,
I mean, you said everything. Well, I'm not so saying, what am what I I'm supposed saying is to know?
You can't just walk into like Caesars and be like, take me to your Taco Bell table.
Now I want to go to Vegas because I want to try that. Can you imagine?
We have blackjack, roulette, Taco Bell.
Listen, I don't gamble. I really don't. I used to go to this really beautiful casino in Richmond, British Columbia, called the River Rock. And the only reason why I went there is because their all-you-could-eat buffet was, like, legit.
That's the right reason.
It was awesome. I used to go there for the all-you-could-eat brunches. Because I'm a millennial and my personal agenda is brunch. So all I'm saying is I'm bad at gambling, but I'm good at brunching.
There you go. So funding was led by Alinea Capital, Bumble Ventures, Tar Heel Capital Pathfinder, and Juju Smith-Schuster, who is an NFL Pro Bowl wide receiver.
Grid was founded in 2018 in Berlin. And the funding is going to, quote, take on the U.S. and look to continue its control of the data infrastructure in an exploding esports market. I have questions about the bubble, word man. The exploding. Bubble.
Well, what if?
Oh, God.
Now, what if?
I don't know.
Esports has been the big scam up until...
I'm not.
I'm tongue-in-cheek here. But, like, the whole we're making money at esports has been the big scam leading up to... Yeah, exactly. The winky. Leading up to now we can gamble on esports and now it's normalized and I don't
that's a pretty successful grift if you ask me. Listen, we're not saying that esports is a grift.
No, of course not.
Because esports is a legitimate market. There are legitimate teams out there doing amazing stuff, especially in the competitive spaces. But also esports has been an extremely difficult industry to pin down and give reasonable valuation to. This is also something we've talked about on this podcast. It is tough. And honestly, if you want to go out there and read really good esports reporting, there are fantastic sites mm-hmm. out there that do talk about the business of esports far more eloquently than we are equipped to, yes. because we are not esports experts at all. We just like joking about it.
Absolutely. It's time for quick hits.
All right, Reuters is reporting that Tencent's Timmy Studios, so this is the team behind Call of Duty Mobile, may be the world's largest developer. What?
Yeah, it's wild.
So sources say that Timmy is responsible for about 40%, now buckle up for this number, of Tencent's 156.1 billion yuan revenue.
So that calculates out to 23.8 billion for all of Tencent. But then that means that 40% of that is about 9.5 billion US.
That's a lot of
one
bells.
One studio.
That's a lot
Call
of bells.
Call of Duty Mobile.
That's a lot of bells for Tom Nook.
It is. Life is Strange and Vampyr developer Don't Nod is moving into publishing, announcing its partnership to publish Broken Lines from a developer called Portaplay, which, by the way, is what I call sitting on the toilet with my Switch.
Wait, you do that?
No.
Oh.
But if I were to, but like porta potty and play.
No, I get it.
But portable.
No, I get
porta play.
It. Porta play.
Reminder,
okay.
That Tencent recently made a $36.3 million investment in Don't Nod to support third-party publishing. The new Life is Strange game that was recently announced. Not developed by Don't Nod.
No.
But it's going to be developed by Before the Storm developer Deck Nine. I loved Before the Storm.
I also loved Before the Storm. It was a wonderful story. It was so emotional. And the new Life is Strange game is all about being an empath.
Mm-hmm.
And like that tickles my empath bone.
Yes.
That's really good stuff. You know what else is really good stuff? Ubisoft has hired a new chief people officer.
Annika Grant was previously global HR director at Dyson's Global Markets. And before that, she was senior director of HR at Uber. While it was investigated by the U.S. Employment Opportunity Commission that led to a settlement of $4.4 million for promoting a, quote, culture of sexual harassment and retaliation against individuals who complained about such harassment.
Now, I remember when all of that went down, and I remember the story that really broke it wide was from an engineer mm-hmm. that had left, a woman who was an engineer at the company and then left because she was essentially harassed out of her job. Now, I also remember that Uber did take significant steps
yes.
to correct this. It'll be interesting to see how Ms. Grant has moved to fix some of those issues. And like moving into Dyson, which I haven't heard a peep out of when it comes mm-hmm. to, is this a good company or a bad company? I don't know. It's a Dyson company.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's fine. But it's interesting that she's now moving into gaming.
Yes. So that's going to be, I'm glad they're making hires. I'm glad they're making moves. Gosh, they sure needed it.
And they still need to continue with their transparency because we haven't heard anything from them in a little while.
Yeah.
When it comes to how they're handling things internally and taking care of their people.
Mm-hmm.
So Amazon has launched a 720p option for its Luna Cloud streaming service in addition to the default 1080p.
And the 4K version that's coming soon.
So here's the piece of the statement that stood out to us. So quote, starting today, we're enabling a new 720p option, allowing for decreased bandwidth and data usage by streaming at a lower resolution. Now, here is the kicker. With this setting, customers that have data cap limitations from their internet service providers can play at a lower resolution without sacrificing gameplay performance.
To me, this is saying the soft part loud. And we saw this with Google Stadia and how they understated their own bandwidth stuff. At 4K
mm-hmm.
and then 1080.
Mm-hmm.
Cloud gaming and data caps are simply incompatible.
They don't work.
No.
They absolutely don't work. And data caps are also useless. They are useless. They're useless to consumers. The only reason why ISPs use data caps is to punish their customers. Like, data caps were not something that I had to deal with when I lived in British Columbia.
Mm-hmm. And we don't have one here.
And we don't have one here. Oh my gosh, can you even imagine with 8 people in this house? It would just be a nightmare. But thankfully, you know, I say thankfully. Thankfully, I don't live there anymore. But not actually. I actually really miss where I lived. Unfortunately, data caps have crept across Canada. And they are insidious. They're insidious in the United mm-hmm. States. They're insidious in Canada. And it's also something that a lot of the rest of the world doesn't tend to have to deal with.
Yeah, if your best option is lower the resolution and have a worse experience, then you're not really selling people on your service.
And you should be lobbying harder against the big ISPs and saying, listen, this is not okay. You can't, like, it's not okay for you to do this to people that use our service.
Absolutely.
But we don't see that because what it all comes down to is the almighty dollar.
Indeed. Here's a good one. This Release is creator one. Asher Vollmer has launched a new studio called Vodeo Games. The 13-person studio has announced its first game, Beastbreaker, for PC and Switch, with another project in the works as well.
You know what's less good?
Oh, geez.
This next story. Oh, God.
This one I laughed at, and you'll understand why in a moment.
Atari, one of the oldest gaming brands, says it is opening up a gaming division.
It's about time that Atari, one of the oldest gaming brands, opened up a gaming division.
The company is restructuring into two main operations, gaming and blockchain.
Ah, gotta love them Atari coin.
No, wait for it. The gaming division will be focused on bringing classic IP into the modern era. I like that.
Yep.
I think that's really interesting and that could be potentially very cool. Atari is on board the NFT bus, though, so there's that.
Ah, yeah. Gotta love that Atari box or whatever they call it, the Atari VCS.
Oh.
How's that going, folks?
Oh,
real
actually,
bad, huh? Feels bad?
Listen, if you have access to those numbers, you should get at us because we really want to see those numbers.
And if you just send us a picture of your hand with how many they've sold,
we'll accept it.
It's like three. So they also have some leadership changes right now. Wade J. Rosen will be stepping into the CEO role from his position as chair of the board of directors, and current CEO Frederick Chesney. Chesney.
I like it. I'm just gonna let you do it.
Chesneys.
Chesneys. Listen.
Hold on. There's a lot of. Hold on. I got his first name wrong too because there's a lot of emphasis. Frederick. Chesney.
Oh, God.
Am I hurting you with this?
It's hurting. It's so funny when you butcher French, but it's also deeply distressing when you butcher French.
Do I do
French.
It with a southern accent?
Don't do it. All right. Bon anyway.
No,
stop it. Buongiorno is Italian. It's not French.
I'm just doing my Inglorious Bastards over here.
And I want my skills.
Yep. So Shanae is staying on to run the blockchain operation.
Great. That's fun. All right. Well, we learned a lot about
Atari.
You're
going to love this next story, Amanda.
Oh, okay. So Valve has added beta support for UTM, Urchin Tracking Module. So this will enable developers to find out which of their marketing efforts are driving traffic.
So this is really cool. So if you're not familiar with UTM, what happens is you add a little thing at the end of your URL that tracks which of your marketing. So it's tied to specific efforts.
It's true. And you can do this with Google Analytics as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the only time I've ever used tracking is with analytics or Google Analytics or with MailChimp. Those mm-hmm. are the two places I've used it with. I didn't know what UTM stood for. So I sat there and I was like, urchin.
Yeah. Wild, right? I didn't know what it stood for either.
I know what UTMs are because I use them.
This is going to be so powerful for developers though. I'm really excited about this.
This is really beautiful. I love taking down data walls. Give your people, the people want access to data.
Yeah. And this is just an important tool because this allows developers to understand what's driving wish lists, what's driving sales,
what's working.
Yeah.
Because if all you're ever doing as an indie developer or a publisher, well, the publishers have more access to data than the developers tend to. But as a developer, especially if you're brand new at this, all you're doing is throwing marketing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Mm-hmm.
This gives you measurables. This is so good. I love it. Give me all the data.
Indeed. Last week, we reported that Monster Hunter Rise, which we've already talked about like three times on this show.
Definitely never heard of this game before.
We said it had shipped 4 billion units. This week, Capcom updated that number. It is now 5 million.
Well-deserved, because Monster Hunter Rise is an extremely excellent
game. That RE engine, keep your eyeballs on it, because that thing is powerful.
That thing slaps.
There are, like, no load times in Monster Hunter Rise either.
No, the load times are so minimal. I have worse load times with first-party Nintendo games.
Yes.
Like, 100%. Mm-hmm. It is, man, RE engine. Love Everyone it. Should be
Which
using
doesn't it. Actually stand for Resident Evil Engine.
No. I know I thought it did, but it actually doesn't.
It's like, what does it stand for again?
Oh, I don't remember, but it's not Resident Evil. I thought it was Resident Evil. I wanted it to be Resident Evil, but it is not.
Yeah, I'm trying to... It was originally built for RE7, which is why we thought it was Resident Evil Engine.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see if it... Because it's so silly.
It's so powerful.
It's so silly. Anyway, why don't you hit the last...
Oh, I'm sorry. You mean hit the last one that is definitely 100% up my alley?
Yeah.
To talk about?
Yeah.
Analyst firm Sensor Tower says that 2021 will be huge for mobile gaming. Yeah, yeah, that tracks. Yeah, that definitely tracks. With first quarter now closed, Sensor Tower is reporting that global consumer spending is up 25% year over year to $22.2 billion. This is globally. $22.2 billion. This also is not surprising. Google Play was up 31%, and the App Store was up 21%.
And I looked it up. It stands for, or it's short for Reach for the Moon Engine. Oh. So it's RE, Reach for the Moon.
That's
which is so... why the logo is like a moon.
Okay, that's wholesome as hell.
It is wholesome. That's and so also, wholesome. I think they got there, because that engine's, that it's a beast. It's great.
It's brilliant. That is the only, honestly, the fact that, listen, Capcom, you are making choices. And we love these choices.
Yeah. That's a nice turnaround from when Lost Planet was just an anchor around their And those were quick hits.
And now it's a break. Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative. And along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz. And we're back!
All right, so...
Mike is very excited about the bottom half of this show.
I am. So, kicking off real quickly, 505 Games parent Digital Bros has reported its half-year earnings for the current fiscal year.
I love that name.
Digital Bros! They're Italian?
Digital Bros!
So you can't see me, I'm doing the Paisan gesture.
Paisan gesture.
Yeah. Revenue is up 29.5% for the first half of the fiscal year to 80.9 million euro. That's 95.8 million US. Gross profit was up 78.1%. Net profit was up more than 700%.
So Death Stranding on PC and Control on all platforms were key drivers, with Assetto Corsa, which is a racing game. It's actually a racing game that we covered, I think, on Game Daily. I think I commissioned a story about the developers.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Ghost Runner, which I keep looking at it, and I might need to play it.
Mm.
Terraria, Bloodstained, and Payday 2 still bringing in significant revenue.
Now, hold on to that Payday 2 thing, because we're going to get back to that. Death Stranding on PC. So this is just PC, remember. They published the PC version because it was a Sony published.
That's right.
Kojima game.
Kojima joint.
Brought in 23.2 million euros. So 27.4 million US. I can read numbers. Numbers are hard. Control.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Though. And Control has sold a total of 59.9 million euro, which is 70.86 million US.
So the cool thing about this, though, is that the development budget, and remember that Control was developed by Remedy.
Yeah.
So the development budget was less than $30 million, according to CEO Taro Virtala in a December 2019 interview with GI.biz.
Now, remember, that probably does not include 505's costs in there. So that was the development budget. So that doesn't include marketing and all that stuff.
But amazing.
Amazing. It's great.
Amazing.
I'm excited. And
everyone should play Control.
Yep. And I'm really excited to see what Epic and Remedy do together. They've got a couple games in the work.
That's going
to
be really great.
Digital Bros has actually also been increasing its stake in Starbreeze and currently holds 11.96% of share capital and 28.57% of voting rights.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Now, as a reminder, 505 was supposed to publish Overkill's The Walking Dead on console. That didn't happen because after the game released on PC, Skybound looked at the game, which was a trash fire, and said, you don't get the license
anymore.
It had
so much promise. I felt so duped. I loved the demo that I saw at E3.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it. I was, like, seriously, I came back after that appointment, and I found Mike on the floor, and I said, I just played the new Walking Dead game, and it was so cool. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to play this game with you. And it's totally going to be one of those games that we play for like ages and ages. Because it like scratches that Left 4 Dead.
We played once and it was a mess.
And it was too bad because it was still beautiful. It was a beautiful game. And it's not that the controls were bad.
There was no onboarding. It was just a trash fire.
It had so much potential. Yeah.
Additionally, 505 sold Starbreeze back the publishing rights for Payday for $30 million plus an earnout of up to $40 million on Payday 3. So even though 505 is not currently engaged. Remember, they have a Starbreeze has a co-publishing agreement with Koch Media.
That's right.
It looks like Starbreeze is going to be making $40 million on Payday 3.
You know what? Tipping my hat to that.
Yep.
It's too bad that about all of the nonsense about Control, though.
Yeah, the Ultimate Edition.
The Ultimate Edition, what yeah.
What a mess.
That continues to be a sore spot. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's move on to a double header of trust and safety stories. And the first one that we are going to touch on is Twitch.
Yes.
So Twitch's revised terms of service spells out that they will begin taking action against harmful actions outside of Twitch. And now the company has detailed how that's going to work.
Now, remember, when they put out their new terms of service, they gave people like 3 months or something to adapt and learn without warning them. And that was nonsense.
I love that I just looked at my camera like,
yeah,
like why? It's not, the camera's not on, but I'm giving you, I'm breaking the fourth wall, but in the podcast.
And one of the things that was really hopeful about it was that they were going to start pursuing bad behavior off of the platform by creators on the platform. So now, what they've said is there are now two categories. One is harassment that takes place both on Twitch and then off of Twitch at the same time or in conjunction.
That's right.
And then there is another category that is just stuff that takes place off of Twitch. Now, for the stuff that is both on and off Twitch, so that if something starts on a stream and then follows people over to Twitter or Facebook or something like that.
That's right. Or YouTube or basically wherever.
There are no changes to that current policy. They are going to continue prosecuting that and taking action against people.
Now, the big thing that they did change, however, and this is the one that you and I were discussing, I think it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was either yesterday or the day before. This is the stuff about the harassment occurring exclusively off of Twitch.
Right. So it's actually not harassment that they're going to be dealing with, it turns out. So what they said was Twitch is going to only enforce against safety risks that don't have anything to do with the service for things that are on the following list. Deadly violence and violent extremism, terrorist activities or recruiting, explicit and or credible threats of mass violence. So against a group of people, event, a location where people would gather. Leadership or membership in a known hate group, carrying out or acting as an accomplice to non-consensual sexual activities and or sexual assault, sexual exploitation of children such as child grooming and solicitation or distribution of underage sexual materials, actions that would directly and explicitly compromise the physical safety of the Twitch community, such as threatening violence at a Twitch event.
Got it.
And that's when we're going to pick apart a little bit.
Yeah.
Explicit and or credible threats against Twitch, including Twitch staff.
So here's a piece that we pulled out from their I guess it was just a blog post?
It was a blog post, yeah.
Yeah, so here's a quote. Quote, at this time, we are not able to investigate behaviors that occur entirely off Twitch that fall outside these categories. This is an iterative, ongoing process, and as always, our end goal is to build a safer Twitch for everyone.
In other words, what it sounds like is you can harass women, minorities, LGBTQ plus individuals. As long as you don't do it on Twitch, you're going to be completely fine. So if you are a shitheel that makes YouTube videos that drive hate and dogpiling to someone on Twitter, that's harassment against an individual that takes place on YouTube, that takes place on Twitter. And if that follows over to Twitch, they still won't do anything against the original creator on YouTube and then Twitter, because that person didn't do anything on Twitch, and it doesn't fall into one of those categories. Now, if that creator starts on Twitch or comes into your Twitch channel and harasses you, then you can pull in all of the other crappy things they do. But there are people, and I'm not going to dignify them by naming
them. No, we don't name names here. If you really don't know who we're talking about, you can DM us.
Yeah. If you are a person like that, and you keep all of your stuff to YouTube, which is permissive as hell, and Twitter, which, there was a huge boycott yesterday that we participated in.
Yes.
Because of Twitter's failure to handle trust and safety in the right way. As long as they don't actually tiptoe into your channel and start harassing you directly on Twitch, then
They get off scot-free, as far as Twitch is concerned.
Yep. So Twitch is celebrating its decision to even bother considering off-platform actions, and you know what? Good for you, Twitch, for actually doing that. And it should be the norm that we look at an individual's behavior. If they have a home on your platform and they do bad stuff elsewhere, and we can prove that that they're harassing people, that's not someone you want on your platform. And hopefully we get to the point where these platforms recognize
this. I really do hope that that's the case, because what this comes down to is that, look, even if that harassment doesn't start on Twitch, it's going to start somewhere and then bleed into Twitch at some point.
As we have seen, because what happens is big creator makes a terrible video that full of bullshit against someone else. They get dogpiled on Twitter, they go online on Twitch and start streaming, and their followers come over.
Yeah.
And because Twitch can't draw the line back.
Yeah, I've moderated some of that.
Yep. Even though evidence is there and you can provide the evidence.
It's really, really bad. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see more of an approach like how Xbox approaches things, where it's just like, listen, this is no tolerance. We have no tolerance for any of this nonsense on our platform. And I remember the days when Xbox Live was a mess.
It was.
It was an absolute mess. And the wonderful team there took so much feedback and so many suggestions and built up not just technology in terms of the technological infrastructure and machine learning. And, you know, I've been through all of that, and they're wonderful. Like, they really do understand, especially for, you know, as parents and stuff like that. But I want to be able to see this from YouTube. I want to be able to see this on Twitch. I want to be able to see this on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, I don't spend enough time on Facebook for it to matter to me, but, you know, I want people to be taken care of. If you are a terrible digital citizen, and our children are learning about how to be good digital citizens at school right now, like beyond what we teach them at home. If you are a terrible digital citizen in one place, chances are you are a terrible digital citizen in other places. And there was a time when we were, you know, all learning how to use the internet where that was just not acceptable. You would just be socially ostracized if you were a bad actor.
Yep.
I remember forums where if I like stepped a toe out of line and I said the wrong thing because I was young, you know, and I don't even remember what some of those infractions were. It could have been like I was swearing or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was on a kid-friendly board. You know, I would get banned from that board for a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I want to be able to see more of that, because it has nothing to do with free speech and has everything to do with you are not free from the consequences of the things that you say.
Yeah. I think about the late Stephen Toulouse and
absolutely
the good work that he did at Xbox, and I wonder what he would have to say and how much amazing difference he could make.
Could you imagine if he was still with us and he was at Twitch? Could you even imagine the good that could come of that? Like, if he wasn't squashed.
Yeah. And we know that there's a problem there. But I want to shift over to talking about Discord, because we talked about this. This is good stuff. We talked about Twitch's transparency report a number of weeks ago, and Discord has released its latest transparency report that covers July 1st through December 31st of 2020. We know that Twitch has reached 140 million monthly active users in December. That's up from 100 million in June. So obviously the pandemic, Discord is growing. I also want to contextualize this conversation, because remember, we've talked about Discord potentially being acquired, and with Microsoft being reported as the key suitor, as the company that is most likely to acquire them.
I wonder what kind of flowers they'll bring.
I wonder. Probably roses. It's like The Bachelor.
That's really pretty. But also The Bachelor sucks.
It does. But I think that when you're talking about an acquisition, this kind of report is even more important.
It really is.
Because you can't preemptively deal with a lot of bad stuff on your platform. A lot of it is reactive, but seeing how you deal with it reactively is very important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So total trust and safety user reports at Discord were up 50% from the first half of the year to 355,000.
That's
a lot.
That's a lot. And so pre-COVID, they were getting about 30,000 reports per month. And I guess December all by itself was 65,000.
Yeah. So again, doubling there.
Yeah.
So by category, obviously harassment is the largest category of reports, representing 37.3% of the total reports.
Stop cyberbullying, people.
Yes. And then cybercrime, interestingly, is 12%. And then you've got not safe for work, just under 10%, and spam at 7.2%. Then in this order, I'm not going to read percentages, exploitative content, platform abuse, hacks and cheats, malware raiding, self-harm concerns, doxing, extremist or violent content, CSAM, which we'll talk about in a second, and other issues. There are two new breakout categories because Discord thought it was important. child sexual abuse material, which is that CSAM, and extremist or violent content and self-harm concerns. So those are three new breakout categories. Sorry. These are small in number, but Discord thought it was important to break them out because they're the highest priority categories and they need to be tracked and reported separately.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So CSAM and extremist or violent content were reported much less frequently in the second half, believe it or not. Cybercrime reports increased 250% from the first half, which I guess people are bored, so they're doing cybercrime.
Listen. As much as we joke about be gay, do crimes, like, don't actually do crimes.
Yeah.
Don't do cyber crimes.
So, we have a list of action rates. Like, I really love, they went into such granular detail in a way that Twitch didn't.
It's really interesting. I'm looking at the granularity here, and they're breaking out in terms of the report type, the reports they received, the reports they actually made action on, and the rate of which they, the percentage rate of that.
There's a catch-all category called Other Issue that was the most acted on, which was 58%, almost 59%.
But it was also one of the smallest categories.
It was, yeah. So if we look at the largest category, which was harassment.
Yeah.
They acted on 15% of those, which is
because
not
they
a
received
big number.
Well, it's because they received 132,000 of those reports, and they only were able to, you know, action on about 20,000 of them. This is something that we have talked about in the past. This is something we've talked about with regards to Facebook moderation. We've talked about it with Twitter moderation. And we've talked about it with Twitch moderation. Now we have to talk about it with Discord moderation. Yep. There is only so much people can do.
Right. And harassment is one of those things where you have the human element says, okay, is this harassment or isn't it? Which is why when you compare it with cybercrime, which is the second largest category, they acted on 41% because you can very easily say, is this against the law or is this not against the
law? Exactly. There's that binary switch there. But when you do add in that emotional element to something like harassment, you know, it's messed up because it's just like, stop harassing people. Mm-hmm. Like, don't harass people. Don't be mean.
Now, I think what's important here is that,
I'm such a Care Bear.
When it comes to things like self-harm concerns, which there were 10,000 reports and 1,300 actions, part of the reason why they can't act on it is because they don't have enough information. And we'll talk about that in a minute. So really interesting. We linked the report in the, if you want to see the full breakdown.
It's fascinating. And you should definitely go take a look at the report because not just based on just the numbers, but the way in which they present the numbers. Presentation of data is just as important as the data itself. So one of the things that they ended up, that Discord ended up saying, is that when it comes to the action rates, you know, this is partly explained by the team's prioritization of issues in 2020 that were most likely to cause damage in the real world. Trust and Safety continued to ensure that reports on high risk categories were reviewed and resolved in under 2 hours.
I love the granularity here.
We love granular data in this house.
There's a lot of detail about spam. 3.26 million accounts were banned for spammy behavior. 266,000 accounts removed for other violation in the second half, with exploitative content topping the list with almost half of those.
Yeah. So if we take a look at the second half of 2020 in terms of the accounts deleted, now this is excluding spam. We look at exploitative content, nearly 130,000 accounts were deleted with regards to exploitative content.
Mm-hmm. Additionally, Discord removed 27,410 servers in the second half. Cybercrime topped the list with about 25% of those. Exploitative content was also a major source of server deletions.
Absolutely.
And again, of course, spam was. Discord issued 28,170 user warnings and 3,999 server warnings. It only issues a warning instead of deletion if A, there is little harm from the behavior, and B, the context suggests the violator can be reformed.
Discord reported 6,948 accounts to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Most of those were for, quote, child harm material that is purged after reporting. These are often flagged by photo DNA software like Content ID for Music. That's the corollary here.
Yep.
There were a total of 83 grooming or child endangerment escalations to NCMEC.
Yeah, that's the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. One of the things that I really liked here was that a lot of this is being identified by photo DNA, because that means you are not exposing your moderators to this kind of content, because it can be traumatic.
not just can, it is. Yes. It is deeply traumatic. I cannot imagine under any circumstances where seeing that kind of material would not send me, in, like, send me personally as a human being that loves children or that, you know, loves people into a mental health tailspin. Mm-hmm. That would be it for me. I would break.
Discord proactively removed 1,259 servers for non-consensual pornography and another 816 as reactive measures.
They also proactively removed 660 servers for sexualized content related to minors and another 1,827 as reactive measures.
So just drawing the line, because we talked about proactively, it's like something was flagged by the automated software. Reactively is a report.
Absolutely.
Like someone reported, hey, there's bad stuff going
on. Yeah, absolutely.
They proactively removed 1,504 servers for violent extremism and another 276 as reactive measures. This was largely centered around white supremacists and associated militarized movements and dangerous conspiratorial groups like QAnon. 334 QAnon servers were deleted.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Discord wants nothing to do with this nonsense. And good for them.
Good for them. You know what? I can absolutely support that. Discord's unban rate for non-spam related reasons is only 1.5%.
And that reminds me of the old Xbox Live. Again, going back to the late great Stephen Toulouse.
Absolutely no tolerance.
Yep.
Zero tolerance. If you have been flagged for abusive behavior or you have done something that is detrimental to the platform and to its members, you are done.
Yep. Discord responded to a total of 3,662 law enforcement requests.
Whoa!
Including preservation requests, that means making sure that data does not get deleted, subpoenas, court orders, search warrants, and even a single trap and trace.
Whoa,
that was wild. So Discord got an order from law enforcement, said, we need you to help us locate this person. So that's what a trap and trace is.
Wild. So Discord complies with valid legal process and can only comply if the legal requests provide enough information to identify a user. So they're not doing this all the time for everything. This is like, it has to be absolutely legit.
Mm-hmm.
Because, listen, even though this is not an anonymous platform, it's tied to your email, it's tied to, you know, potentially your phone number.
You need a court order.
You need a court order. Like, it's important.
Yep. Discord also received 325 requests for emergency disclosure. So these are made in times of imminent danger of death or serious injury. So if someone is threatening self-harm, for instance, right? It complied with 122 of those requests, and the others, they were either unable to identify the user or did not feel a disclosure was warranted. So if I had to guess, when you, let's say, call a wellness check on someone or a welfare check on someone because, oh, they're going to hurt themselves, I'm assuming that this is Discord weeding out some swatting attempts.
Sure. And as somebody who has certainly called for a wellness check once, I called for it when I was a teenager once because someone that I cared about very deeply was threatening self-harm. That's some really scary stuff. It's really scary to be in the position of, I need this person to be taken care of. They are in danger.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh my gosh, that just breaks my heart. But you know, let's before we wrap things up today, I want to have a quick discussion about how this does impact potential acquisition.
Yep.
So if you are sitting with your red rose, because apparently you're the business version of The Bachelor now. I don't even understand.
That's right. You can hire me to be your business guy bachelor. Person.
With human. Roses. Cool.
I got it.
Nailed it.
Got that.
All right. So if you were sitting there with your red rose and you were thinking about, do I acquire Discord? How does this make you feel?
I think this makes me feel pretty good. I really appreciate not just the efforts that Discord has gone to, but the granularity of this report is really impressive.
Absolutely.
Because one of the big criticisms of Twitch's first transparency report was there was a lot of guesswork. Like, we think the line on the graph is here. They refused to give out exact numbers for different types of reports and actions and all that stuff. And quite frankly, that does not create confidence. To me, if I am acquiring a social media platform, I am aware that that platform is going to have problems. There are users that are going to create problems on that platform.
Yeah.
The issue isn't are there or aren't there problematic users. It's how you deal with them and what's your process and how you report that out and how you deal with law enforcement and how you deal with child endangerment, which because that's such an important issue.
It's so important. And it is something that we have seen time and time and again from... listen, there is great reporting done out there that is just, it's so important to understand. And I personally have written about this, how, you know, content creators are not your children's friends ever. Mm-hmm. It's not a thing. A 13-year-old should not be hanging out with a 25-year-old mm-hmm. on Discord.
So for me, top tier questions are, do you condone and support and home white supremacists
and we other can hate see, groups? And we can see, based on this information, that they are actively removing, not just reactively removing, but proactively mm-hmm. removing these communities and saying, no, this is not representative of the culture that we want to foster at Discord.
And then corollary to that, are you hosting servers where people are planning armed insurrection of your country? And here we have, again, they removed 334 QAnon servers. We know that they had that following Charlottesville. And I would say that prior to Charlottesville, Discord was not doing as good a job as it should, but I think it learned its lesson following Charlottesville and is now doing, it is trying to prevent people from organizing on its platform.
It does come down to, does this do real world harm?
Yes.
Does this, and okay, so listen, I am a firm proponent of, there is very little difference between what happens on the internet versus what happens in real mm-hmm. life. The person that I am online is the person that I am same. In real life. Mike's the same way. A lot of our friends are the same way. And yes, there are some people out there that do need to have personas because, you know, they're not naturally like always on
or they're bubbly. Insecure or believe they're supposed to act a certain way.
Listen, we are not judging you for having personas. That's not the point. The point is that there is very little difference, in my opinion, between the internet and meet space.
Yep. And if you're shitty to me online, you're probably going to be shitty to me in person. And if you're not, then I have to wonder why you're treating me poorly online. And
or why you're treating you well in person.
Yeah. So I guess as someone who was insecure on social media for a long time and felt like I did have something to prove and was more aggressive on social media defending my work or whatever.
Oh, you're a marshmallow now.
It's a lesson, and it's sometimes you get it right off the bat, like you, and sometimes you it's a lesson that has to be learned the hard way, like me. But it's a lesson you need to learn. For me, I'm looking at these things, and then of course the next thing being, how are you dealing with child endangerment on your platform?
And
being
clearly
another one. And I think if Microsoft is looking, like, because if you're looking at an acquisition, you're saying, all right, what are my potential liabilities here? Where are we going to get into trouble? Where are the potential?
Where are the skeletons?
Yeah, where are the skeletons? And for me, Discord going through this, if this accurately represents
everything. And it's a big if, because we don't have access to that data, so it's not like we can independently corroborate
it. And it goes beyond the data for me. It goes deep into philosophy, real core beliefs as an organization.
Sure.
That sort of thing. If this level of data permeates deep into culture, then I think Microsoft has some reason to feel pretty confident if they are, in fact, if this does move forward,
Certainly.
The reports are correct, all of this.
Additionally, if I'm sitting there as Microsoft, I'm looking at all of the work that Microsoft has done with Xbox Live mm-hmm. and all of the work they've done with content moderation before it even hits human eyes.
Yes.
And thinking about the ways in which all of that could kind of co-mingle together and the ways in which those infrastructures could play. Like that to me is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
That's deeply, deeply exciting, because I know for a fact that Microsoft is sharing a lot of that infrastructure across the industry.
Yep.
It's not like they're just keeping it for Xbox
Live. At the end of last generation, they teamed up with Sony.
And it's very important. And I think that they will continue to do that kind of great work because they really do want gaming to be for everyone. So, you know, that means that moderation matters. I'm very excited about the work that Discord is doing to ensure that its platform is a little safer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough. Like, they're
No, this is a war that is only going to get harder to fight as new groups pop up, as new causes pop up. Here's the thing that I would want to know on the other side of this.
Right.
You are shutting down QAnon.
Yeah.
You're shutting down white supremacist and hate groups, right? Yeah. Are you on the flip side supporting social justice organizing, and how are you supporting that?
Right.
Because I think that's the other piece of this. There's the shutting down the negative, but I think finding ways to promote the positive is important.
I think that that's probably where they do fall down, because we've seen this with friends of, you know, mm-hmm. with friends of the show, over at But Why Though, where they struggled as an, they're a really big community mm-hmm. on Discord. They struggled to get that big check mark that says, no, we are verified. This is a verified server, a verified community, and we do good. And they do.
Yeah. So I think there's two learnings for me out of this. One, I love the structure of this report. I love the great. Data in this report. I hope that
I'm going to go read it in its entirety. And you not should. Just it's the notes. Fantastic. It looks awesome.
I would love to see from Discord a corollary report about social justice and the ways that it is it's supporting communities. So this is the data about transparency and trust and safety, right? This is the stuff that I was talking about doesn't necessarily belong in this report.
No,
there's a separate place to talk about that. So I want to see them side by side.
It's the same kind of thing that EA does, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
With, like, their governance and everything like that. And they do that once a year where they talk about the report of, like, here is where we're...
their diversity report.
And... Yeah, their diversity and inclusion, not initiatives, because, listen, I am of the mind that diversity and inclusion is not about an initiative or about a group of initiatives. It is the work that you do every single day to ensure that not just your workplace, but the culture that you are promoting for yourself and for the people that you work with and the people that you love, that everything comes right back to creating space for everyone.
Okay. Yeah. The other thing it really paints a picture of is that Twitch needs to do better. That was we reported on its first transparency report. Its second needs to be much more detailed.
It really does. Because if this is what we can expect from Discord, there is no reason we can't expect this from Twitch.
Absolutely. And I think that is a great place to wrap up the show. Thank you so much for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast. I am at Footerish. Footerish.
That was beautiful. I like that. And I'm at Amanda Farrow still.
AmandaFarrough.
Oh, no.
Amen.
No, Amanda.
Oh, my mistake. Got it.
Anyway. If you enjoyed our weird podcast, which, you know, we hope you do, you can subscribe to our RSS feed. We are at virtualeconcast.com. We also have writing on there. Like, we're writing more. You it was a thin week this week.
It was. There was not a ton of news, and I didn't feel like there was a need to... There wasn't really something that sung to me. But there was. You wrote about CD Projekt, and people should read that. It's amazing analysis.
We'll
drop the link into the show notes before we publish.
It was good stuff. I had a really... I was a little nervous about writing about it, because I'm like, what do I know about business? I've been doing this for a while.
You're a co-host of a podcast about business.
What do I know? But anyway, if you don't want to read my writing and Mike's writing, that's okay, too. We're not going to force you. You can listen to us on all major podcasting platforms instead.
Yep.
Including Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Casts. I think there's one more. Oh my God, Pocket Sand, right in the face. If you enjoyed what you listened to today, and we really do hope that you did, please subscribe and, if possible, review the show on your platform of choice. We love hearing from you.
Absolutely. You can DM us with questions. We love listener questions.
Oh my goodness. We get so excited whenever people send us listener questions. And we're getting better about posting when we're about to go live with the podcast so that people can get in on.
We didn't today because our office, it's a thing. It's a thing.
Everything's broken.
Everything's broken right now. It's a thing.
But anyway. If you want to get in with the listener questions, how can our people do that?
You can DM us at Virtual Econcast. You can send us an email at podcast@fsquared.biz. You can join our Discord and just hang out with the community and just shoot us questions. We actually did a talk this week.
They did.
About some ethical issues around previews and reviews and their
engaging content creators.
And so that was really good. We had a lively group and it was a lot of fun. If you have some secret information, because we still do reporting.
We do. We are reporters, as it turns out.
Yep. You can hit us up on Signal, and if you would like our numbers, we would be glad to give them to you. You can just ping us on Discord or ping us on Twitter via DM, and we can send you our Signal numbers. We'll drop the link to Amanda's piece about CD Projekt Red.
CD Projekt Group,
yeah. And their new strategy and the analysis of some of the stuff that's going on there.
Red 2.0.
Yes. And we will be back next week. And in the meantime, remember to wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We'll see you soon.